You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number
160. Now that was Jingle Bells, a teaser by Natalie Brown, who's a soulful vocalist songwriter with a very dynamic multi-octave range. I will play the full song at the end of my podcast. I hope you enjoy it. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to all of the things we talk about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. My topic today is an interview I had with Calvin Shum, who's the CEO of a new company called Lovoco. Lovoco offers accessibility, communication, and educational solutions with a proprietary speech and translation artificial intelligence system that results in instantaneous bilingual subtitling. Calvin completed his BBA in International Business and Marketing at Temple University here in Philadelphia and certification in Foreign Languages and International Economics at Tsinghua University. I met Calvin at a conference and he showed me his product right there on his phone and I was blown away. His software is designed to do captioning of live or recorded audio. And of course, it'd be a great addition to recorded videos. In fact, when we did the interview, he demonstrated on his laptop the ability for the software to translate into German as we were recording our live interview. So we discuss how speech technology improves accessibility and ADA compliance for live and recorded lectures. They also have a social mission that donates a system to a local primary or secondary school of your choice. So without further ado, here's my interview with Calvin Shum. Calvin, thank you so much for stopping by to tell me about your app. Before we jump into that, though, why don't you tell my audience a little bit about your background and how you got involved?
Absolutely. So for me, growing up a second-generation Chinese-American, it was always very difficult to learn Mandarin, if you could imagine. So for me, besides having to study very diligently, I took the adventure to go study in Beijing. And I studied at Tsinghua University, and I was very happy. But when I came back, I knew there was something missing because that type of immersion really accelerated my learning and language. But when I came back, I was like, in class, while I'm learning augmented reality for computer science, why couldn't I at least see whatever I'm hearing and then also hear it in a different language or see it in a different language so I could learn vocabulary that's of interest, pertinent, and relevant to what I'm learning. So I came back and I built the best team I could. We found the best technologies for advanced speech recognition, machine translation, and we built a system that everything a speaker says or instructor when they use the software would be subtitled on screen in two languages. We got a transcript afterwards, captions and subtitles for the videos, and abstract analysis for afterwards. And that's what we are here to discuss today.
Wow. I mean, that sounds pretty incredible. I wish I had a tool like that when I was studying German.
Yeah.
So it's an artificial intelligence platform that I assume it's hosted on a web, or is this something that can be actually downloaded onto your mobile device?
So most of the computation is done on the cloud level, just so that the processing is much more robust. We're slowly integrating our GPU cloud because we partnered up with NVIDIA, and it's something that we're looking to make a switch to. But so right now, it's really for enterprise software, for higher education or corporate learning settings. But afterwards, we're slowly transitioning. We have a team of interns from Temple University that's helping us create a mobile app so that when you're attending your next conference, you could download the app. And if you're very far back or you're not even in the same room, you could see what the speaker's saying, the video, their slide deck, and the captions along. And then you could choose a target language so that you could, so whether you're studying German or Spanish or Korean, you could see it live in your language that you want.
Well, that's pretty cool. I know we're looking at different audience response systems here on campus. One of them is Glisser, which I'm fond of, but I don't think it has that sort of captioning ability. So if I can compare it to, it's different than, say, Google's Translate app, which actually I've never tried it for a very long period of time, but something you would, it's on your phone and you can, you're traveling abroad, you could have a two-way conversation with somebody in another language. Can yours do that as well, or is it primarily designed for presentations like in a classroom?
Right now, we're more presentation-oriented. The speech-to-speech application is for consumers is, you know, down the road. But we, you know, Google Translate and, you know, Bing or any of the other big providers, it's very generic in the sense that it's like a dictionary. And it doesn't have personalization for your voice or your intentions or anything of that nature. So we are working very hard with our natural language processing and our artificial intelligence to understand each one of our speakers very well. So right now we really aim it for academia, meetings, industry, and multinationals and governments. So we do apply it more for right now, just speech to text and then translations. But later on, we'll have more advancements to come with wearable technologies.
Well, the whole idea of using artificial intelligence now is amazing to me. I mean, this is, you know, Google has said they're becoming a AI first company, and it seems like possibilities are endless. How do you build something? Do you take advantage of Google tools, or how do you get started with building an AI application?
Well, you have to have very fundamentals in computer science, which I never had growing up with an international business and marketing background for my undergraduate studies. I found the best talent I could around the world that study engineering to a very high degree. So, for instance, our chief technology officer, Nagendra Goel, he earned his PhD in Johns Hopkins in speech processing. So he spent 25 years in industry and in academia to study how to make speech recognition the best it possibly can. And actually, we recently stacked our engine up against Google's for recognition, where they performed on 80s on average. We performed upper 90s. But it took, let's say, a lot of dedication to build something internally so that we can create the privacy for those who want data protection and that we can secure it well.
So what stage would you say your company's in now? You're still considered a startup? Do you have paying customers? How's that going?
Right now, so we're finished with R&D. We have a product that we've been testing at locations. And right now, we have a partnership with ACT, American College Test, NVIDIA, and we'll be sponsoring the African Trade Investment Global Summit in D.C., and so we have a lot of things in the pipeline that we're working on, a lot of fun partnerships that we're growing and expanding in each one of the markets that we're in. For instance, we're partnered up with Meetings Professional International. They're the largest meetings group, one of the largest ones in the world. And for their academia, so for their Academy of Corporate Learning, they've taken us on tour to a lot of different events in Vegas or wherever they choose to go.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah, it seems like there's a big need for something like this. With, you know, and any company worth its salt these days is a international company. They have offices everywhere. I can imagine this is really really something that could go far. How do you see it being used in the education environment? Could you give us a scenario or two how this might be used?
Absolutely, I could give you a really reason why we do this. A concrete reason is 1 out of 5 U.S. citizens are deaf or hard of hearing. That means those students always growing up had to sit in the front rows. They always had to read the lips of the professor or the teacher. Can you imagine paying a lot for an event and not even able to hear? How painful it is. And actually, so many students, unfortunately, never speak up about their needs. Even though there's a whole office of disability services, they never mention that, oh, we need accommodations. And sometimes the teachers, then if they never notify their teachers, they always get ridiculed because they're like, well, why do you have a headset on? Like, are you listening to music? So I've heard too many bad stories. This is one thing that really is pertinent and useful for them. They have a visual tool that they could see. And then for the language learning component, when you know, rapid language learning is very efficient when you learn information that's like something that's to your liking, right? So you're taking all these classes. Now you can take in another language as well, simultaneously. And then the third aspect really is the neuroscience behind it is when you see and hear one thing using two parts of your brain to process, you're statistically significant to retain that information so much more. We're not the first to create this. Real-time captioning was done back in the 2000s by IBM. They helped a handful of schools, and at that time, it was, say, anywhere from $50 million to $100 million that they were generating from these schools that they were helping for disability purposes specifically. But given that they were IBM, they didn't produce over $1 billion, so the company said, no, just sell it. It still lives on to this day, but that type of research really proved that they actually used 10 years of data to prove that with using real-time captioning, transcription, and then interactive transcript for videos so that you could do keyword search or anything of that like, and captions for the videos, students improved their grade by a whole letter grade. So it was really effective. It was just sad that they had to can the project because of financials.
Is that the company that became Nuance, or?
So they sold via Scribe, or via Voice, their speech recognition engine, to Nuance.
I see.
And then now they have it in a consortium where they still use it.
I see. But it's amazing how voice recognition like that has just spread. And like you said, there are services, I guess, they've been around a while where you can translate the audio from a video into captions. But this is real time. What's the latency?
So it all depends on how much we soup it up, because if we equipped it with more computational power, it's faster. But on a standard, it should be less than a quarter of a second.
Wow.
Like it should be instantaneous, because
that's wild. This always fascinates me how you train something, how you train AI to do this. So is this a kind of a situation? I remember hearing about Google, and how the reason they got so good at text translation was because they didn't just go through rule sets and parsing all the text, but they would compare two different texts in two different languages on a massive basis, and that's became the basis of their translation. Is that sort of the way this works?
Yeah, so neural networks is one of the bigger fields now, in the sense that AI is just taking lots of data and lots of computations, like calculations, to figure out and solve common trends that they see within that data set. So then when you dig it down another layer, when you add layers and layers and layers of layers of different types of data, then it can pull and retrieve that information faster or in a more efficient manner. But yeah, that is in essence how the software gets better over time, that it collects more use case, it collects more case studies, so to speak, of speaker profiles, vocabularies, and it knows how you like to say things, how often you use certain words, and it understands both grammar and context. So that's the hard part, because it's very easy just to load up lots of dictionaries, but it's heavy on the size filing. But for it to be a smart system, it really has to understand deeper about linguistics. And that's why there's a whole field that's spun off called computational linguistics, of which one of our other partners, he has his master's in computational linguistics. So he heads the translation system. So that is in efforts. I think everyone in the industry is really moving towards the, deep learning route of, multiplying layers of information. And the more we see it being used, the more it'll get better over time.
It would seem to me that at least in the beginning stages, you have to have human beings that are looking at these translations, like to see how accurate they are. And so, is that still something that's ongoing? That you still have to have a lot of, is it labor intensive to validate these systems?
It could go both ways. You can automate it with systems like BlueScores, or a lot of the times we do like to do it internally to see where we stack up against the industry and how we compare, but it's always nice to feed the computer back with supervised learning, so to speak, so that it can do more unsupervised learning over time. But yeah, it depends. That's why you always pick, things that you like to translate about. So we pick TED Talks or anything that's of intellectual value or just of interest.
All right, like my podcast.
Yeah, exactly, like your podcast.
Yeah, right now my podcast just, an audio podcast. Occasionally I'll do a video, but I've seen other folks that do podcasts that, even though there's no visual interest, they put it up on YouTube. So, in fact, I was thinking of doing that just as another platform people could find my material. So wouldn't it be neat to have my audio podcast on YouTube with the captions running across the bottom in a language that you could pick? Is that something that's doable for somebody with my means?
Absolutely. So actually, let's take your use case, Rod. So being a professional podcaster, what the advantage of using our software as a service is, so right now we're captioning and transcribing this podcast, actually. You can then upload this transcript to your podcast so that it has greater SEO or SMO, so that you can look for keywords or anything of the like, verbatim text. And then afterwards, if you do want to choose to upload it to YouTube, you can find a greater performance than just using the default captioning that they have built in. You know, let's just be honest, Alphabet spends a lot of their time doing a lot of different things. So I will say Google is, you know, a great innovator, but at core, they are, in terms of their revenue dollars, they are a ad tech company, sure, more so than anything else nowadays.
Yeah. For those of you, obviously, since you're listening on audio, you don't know what I'm looking at. Why don't you explain what your screen is showing here?
Sure. So we have a transcript at the top of our software, which has been recording the whole time. Then we have another transcript for German, but then for an overlay, we have augmented reality in the sense that there's a transparent or translucent text that then can be overlaid for PowerPoints or PDFs in both languages at the same time.
I see it happening at the bottom of your screen now. So that's pretty impressive. Yeah, and the latency is very quick. It's almost like hearing an echo, you know. It's just like when I'm reading what I'm just saying, it's kind of weird. But that's pretty impressive.
Lots of years of research and development, and we're finally glad that we can use this to help people, because, you know, our core mission, we are a social mission driven company. So for every one contract we sign, we donate a system to a primary secondary school of your choice in your honor, so that we can help accelerate students' learning and allow them to learn how they learn faster. Because at the end of the day, this is actually very basic. It's almost like the primary colors of learning, visual, auditory, and kinesthetic learners, is just giving more routes for them to obtain the content. So that's why I've been such a big proponent of universal design learning, because the way we deliver the content is also as important as how the students can express it and be tested on it. So it's very important to keep all users in an inclusive environment, given that, you know, they always say we're the melting pot in the U.S., right? But this year, the Open Doors statistics showed that we had an increase in international students. There are over a million this year of internet out-of-country students. And as we have more and more students overseas ourselves and internally in the U.S., we have to keep in mind those users, all the ESL learners, and then also even anyone with any type of different, let's say, birth circumstances that they can't choose, the different health circumstances, that they still have equal access to equity in learning. And it's not so much the access to the information, it's about making it useful for them so that they can turn it into wisdom and apply it where it needs to be applied.
Sure. I mean, I can certainly see how this could be a wonderful adjunct to the way we teach. We have a lot of foreign students. English is not their first language in a lot of cases. I'm sure it makes it very hard for them. They love to have lecture capture. We use two different systems on campus for lecture capture, and you can see how, especially before the exams, you know, it gets a lot of traffic, and they watch these, you know, lecture. You know, we're trying to get away from lectures like many schools and flipping the classroom, but still, there's a lot of lecture material going on, and to have this translated into their native language would certainly be a no-brainer. I assume, are you working yet with some of the major lecture capture providers, or do they have their own way of doing that?
So, like, for all the MOOCs, like edX and Coursera, they've been using, it's a volunteer service, right? So because I want to learn, let's say, cost accounting, I would watch the video and transcribe it in Chinese or caption it in Chinese. It's all done by a volunteer basis, but doesn't go to say that we're not willing to go help them with more tool sets so that the students can do it in a more efficient manner. So our post-production tool sets are going to expand out so that we can help more and more providers who do offer free education. You know, we have some world-class education online, But again, some people may have access to it and some may not in different ways.
The way it's being deployed now, the speaker, the lecturer or the presenter would be using your software, let's say, at the podium. How long is it going to be before a student, can just hold up his smartphone and just capture the audio that way and see the translated text? Is that doable, or is it the audio quality is certainly, I imagine, is an issue?
It's doable. It's just given that we are very, everything is very speaker oriented, or like the keynote speaker oriented. So it makes the audiovisual team, it facilitates that process so much more when it is done on the presenter side. But, if a student does transcribe it depends on how clean the audio is. The better it is, the more accurate it'll clearly be. And so it's something that we want to put in the hands of the students. We're slowly working on it, but there has to be some sort of good captioning device to do so, like an audio, input device.
Right, right. I'm just, the wheels are spinning here and thinking about a student watching a recorded video in their lecture capture. And why couldn't they input the headphone jack out from the computer where they're watching it into the microphone input of their smartphone and have that translated on the fly? Seems like that could be doable.
Yeah, we also do a lot of video captioning. So actually, we have a loopback feature where, say a student was watching a lecture, they could run it through and they could see the captions live. Or we could do it on the post-production side and have it like cleaned and edited.
Right.
But it is something that anyone with our software could actually do. You could watch any video you want and it can be done on a live translation and captioning style.
What would you say is the accuracy these days of, on the fly type, with that being, cleaned up in some way? What's the...
So speech recognition has always been ahead of the curve in terms of the industry standards. It should be upper 90s. Depending on the speaker, the acoustic settings, they're, high 90s of like 97s that we've seen or 99s. And then translation has always been the one catching up, so to speak. It is hard to not just translate the words, but the meaning behind it and the reasoning behind it is, we've seen 80 is about the standard or the average. And then that is what a lot of the researchers have been developing over time. We're very keen on making it more accurate, whether it be statistical machine translation or, rule-based machine or neural network. Any type of hybrid is what we play around with so that it can be more useful and for all parties.
Great. Well, listen, I want to be respectful of your time, and I have a challenge for you. Maybe you can make this happen. It could be a first for me as well. Maybe this podcast, you could arrange to have it actually, you've already translated to German, haven't you? So maybe we can make this public and do what I was talking about and put this on YouTube with the simultaneous translation. Maybe you can help me make that happen.
Challenge accepted.
Okay. Very good, Calvin. Thanks for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Danke schön.
So that's it for the interview. I hope you enjoyed it. I really love to find young, innovative technology companies in the area of educational technology. So I think their product certainly has a lot of utility, or for any entity that is giving live presentations, and certainly would make a great adjunct for lectures, especially if there are a lot of students in your audience who do not have English as the first language. So that's it for now. Stay tuned for Jingle Bells by Natalie Brown. And until next time, have a great week.
What fun it is to ride and sing a song. fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog or send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.